WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I have not changed my background here because I'm visiting with old friends. I want them to remember my two decades downtown and the beautiful sunrises over the East Harbor. This guy and I go back a long, long ways. We're four decades into this. We get together right around this time every year on the air. Sometimes we get together off the air and go to a ball game or eat a hot dog or maybe crack a crab if I could drag his ass into Baltimore. He at one point was a fantastic scribe for the Baltimore Sun, lauded on this year's program by one John Eisenberg last week, along with Dale Austin, as being a great teacher of the grand game. And as much as I had Donna Brothers on who just wrote a book, and I'll visit with Dick Girardi this week and Randy Moss, no one I do go deeper with back to Paul Simon, Grace Lynch shows than this guy. He is Marty McGee. You can find him out at the Daily Racing Forum. You can find him out on Twitter. You can find him where good horse racing information lives and prevails. How was that? Did I do okay?
You done all right there, Nasty. I mean, Nestor. Yeah.
Well, you know, Girardi had like a handler who sent me this whole thing about eclipses and like all these things. And I'm sure you've won some awards and all that, but I didn't get the memo on that. How are you? I mean, I love you. I miss you. I haven't been to the Derby in a while. I'm getting a little bit of an itch. I mean, I've had some friends. My friend Leonard Raskin went 2 weeks ago. You know how much I love the Derby. I hear about this Derby thing. Damn, they didn't have that 20 years ago. So I need to get back down there. State of racing. This is a weird week, dude. We're trying to get the new track built. I'm talking nice things at Baltimore Positive. But, man, we don't have the Kentucky Derby winner. The last time that happened, I think you and I had just met. You were here for Spend the Buck, right?
That was my first Preakness. It came 6-3. And if you watch the movie God's Pocket, one of the last movies that Philip Seymour Hoffman did. It's a real critical scene in the movie, and it comes 6-3 where he needs the three, or he might have needed the six, I don't know, but it's Tank's Prospect nailing Chief's Crown on the wire. It was 1985. That was my first ever Preakness, and it lacked the Derby winner who ran instead in the Jersey Derby when Bob Brennan dangled a bunch of money in front of the connections.
You know what I remember about that day? I was working at that Derby or that Preakness. I was working at the News American and I was a film runner. I had never been to Pimlico in my life. My dad didn't go to the track. It wasn't my dad. We went to Colts games, Orioles games, hockey games, Clippers games, Harlem Globetrotter, you know, all that. But my dad was not a horse racing guy. So that's why when I met you, when I was the tender age of 17, guys like you and Chris Thomas, and Charlie Ekman, Charlie Lamb, Rich Petra, y'all polluted me and it got me into the ponies. But the first day I went over there was that day to run film down to South Street to the News American. And I walked onto the campus and there stood Howard Cosell. The one time I came within 10 feet of him, it was back by the barns and the trailers. He was wearing the gold jacket and he's about 6'7", dude. He was a huge man. And I saw he had a cigar and he's walking through and I'm like, you never forget when you saw Howard Cosell, Marty McGee. You don't.
Yeah. You know, my first recollection of meeting Howard Cosell was 1982 at the Derby. It was Derby week. It might've been Wednesday or Thursday.
Were you a fan or just a?
Well, I was a senior at University of Kentucky. I probably had graduated, was ready to graduate. And I said, Howard, do you think Gato del Sol will win the Derby? Because I liked Gato del Sol. As a matter of fact, for the Kentucky Colonel, the UK paper, I was a sports editor. That was my last column picking Gato del Sol.
He said, gate dancer? What did he say?
He said, no young man, not him. Royal Roberto will win the Kentucky Derby. And of course, he was wrong and I was right.
Marty, bring me up to speed, dude. Let's just start at the top. I had Girardi on 2 weeks ago before the Derby, and we talked a little bit about Baffert. Man, there's so many elephants in this room, right? The missing horse, the 2 weeks, Baffert missing. What's the state of all of this right now? Because this is as disjointed as COVID was and running the Derby out of season and like all of the weird things we did. You know, the drugging, doping, and look, I come from the baseball background where nobody speakies and we point fingers and, you know, I'm not here to talk about the past and all that. You know, horse racing always had this reputation, right? When, you know, they made movies about it, Guys and Dolls and stuff, right? And crooked horse races and all that stuff. I think for the public, I'm just a dude, right? I'm a little confused by all of this. I just know probably not really good for the industry. None of this.
Well, we're at a crossroads, Nestor. I mean, the whole Baffert thing has been a stain on the game for a year now. And all that the general public sees is horse racing, doping, drugs, controversy.
Horses dying in barns.
Things like that.
Yep.
And there is federal legislation in place. It has yet to be implemented. It was supposed to come in by July. That's not going to happen. That endeavors to clean it up. And for once and for all, there is some disagreement, some honest disagreement from horsemen as to whether or not some of these therapeutic medications should be rid of the way that they're being proposed. But nonetheless, we just need to get our house in order and try and get this stuff behind us. But because if you saw like the Kentucky Derby last week, that was a Disney-like story with Rich Strike winning the Derby at 80-1. The trainer happens to be a friend of mine, Eric Reed. I was his point man in terms of on Friday morning before the Derby, whether or not he was getting in or not. Initially, he texted me at 9:01, 1 minute after scratch time, said, well, it was nice. It was good to get the experience and all that. And about 3 minutes later, I had to put on Twitter, wait, he's in. You know, not that anybody really cared at that point. And so many people, including myself, when that horse flashed by, Rich Strike, number 21, it was kind of hard to tell what his number was. People were like, it was like a Canyonero the second moment back in 1971, except Canyonero had the lead down the stretch. And everybody said, who's number 15? Well, this is one where people go, who won the race? I had some people tell me they didn't know for minutes afterwards that it was number 21. That's how obscure his chances were regarded before. But just the whole all the circumstances involved were such that it's really a fairy tale type of thing.
You had a perfect Kentucky Derby, right?
As opposed to all the Baffert stuff.
Perfect Kentucky Derby, like in the way that you would want to write some sort of a script with horses, the weather held up, like all of that, right? It was a perfect Kentucky Derby. Look up here and I'm like, oh man, Preakness is coming, man. They're bringing Adley Rutschman up for the Orioles, and the Ravens just had a draft, and look, it's going to be 94 degrees, and I'm not going to be drunk like I was in 89 for Sunday Silence and you know, in an ice bath, and that's not going to happen this year. And then all of a sudden, like, the horse doesn't come. And listen, I was in Elmont, New York for the Derby. I watched the Derby with Barry Trotz, my dear friend. We were just kind of hanging out before this John Mayer show. They built the hockey rink in the parking lot, right, of Belmont. And so I'm up there, and I'm thinking, how bad do we feel here? But in Belmont, you know they don't have a triple crown. There's the TV, all of this. And for what Baltimore's trying to do to resurrect this thing, right? I mean, just literally. But this is a legitimate thing to say, we don't want to bring a horse back in 2 weeks. It was 80-1. We don't think the horse can win. We don't think it's good for the horse. And here we are again with that topic. On top of Baffert, all these other things, we're at this, what's the relevancy of the Preakness Stakes now that we're here and we're going to build something for this? And I know guys like you, Moss, I've talked to you guys every year. It's like horsemen don't want to bring their horse back. If Pletcher wins the Derby, he's sort of obligated, maybe, but the obligation goes out the window when this happens. And as I've said to Girardi, dude, I'm old, but I'm not that old, and you're young and still sexy. Back in 1985, this was a massive scandal, and especially the way it all went down with Jersey, almost like the golf thing now, where there's like dirty money being poured into F it all up, kind of, sort of. This, somebody needs to step in here and figure out how these races should be run in the modern era and get everybody on board so we're not building something out here that they're going to turn into the USFL.
Well, I mean, I know that Randy Moss is definitely for extending, giving more time between the races, the 2 to 3 weeks, the 2 weeks from Derby to Preakness, and then the 3 weeks from Preakness to Belmont is somewhat anachronistic in that that's the way they used to do it. And as you said, like Pletcher, he only comes with a Preakness horse if A, the horse has won the Derby, or B, the horse has not run in the Derby. If he has the runner up or anything like that, he skips it and goes to Belmont.
Right. Yeah. Right. And Belmont pays nice, right? Belmont's a purse that you, if you could have one or the other and take care of your horse in a flat world, not knowing about history and triple, all that stuff, you would go in that angle, right? If you don't have Pharaoh.
You know, but there's such an emphasis on speed breeding that, you know, a Belmont winner is somewhat saddled with the fact that, so what, he won the Belmont or a mile and a half. We don't ever run him a mile and a half on the dirt anymore. So, you know, just getting back to your original question, this very much detracts from the Preakness. It's why Chick Lang in 1982 and 1985 took it so personally that a guy would have the cojones to skip the Preakness, you know, not even try for the Triple Crown. There has been some extenuating circumstances in 2019 with Country House was hurt, Grindstone was hurt. Last year, Mandaloon, the whole Baffert thing had, you know, they, anyway, but that's the last time was 82 and 85 where the owner of the horse voluntarily said, no, we're not going to run. So this is, you know, almost 40 years that it's happened like this. So,
well, golf wouldn't want anybody skipping a PGA this weekend, right?
No, they would not, you know, especially if they had a chance, yeah, if they'd won the Masters to go ahead and make the Grand Slam sweep. So, you know, there's a lot of analogies like that, but I think it is a viable argument to go ahead and extend the time between races. However, you know, what are you going to do in Maryland? Would there be the interest on, say, Memorial Day weekend to make the Preakness a fixture then? I mean, aren't people busy with doing their going to the Ocean City and stuff?
No. I think the city could embrace that. I don't. If the argument here is that our city is effed up, I'll agree with that. If the argument here is that over the last 40 years, the race has been diminished, I'll agree with that. If the argument is from the Maryland Jockey Club to Magma that they've allowed Pimlico to go into disrepair and the Magma people were nefarious, at the very least, in taking money and pouring it into Laurel and thinking they're going to move the race down there and screw Baltimore. And then there's the part where, like, Baltimore is now up and going to redo this and do it right and have a plan and have a permanent plan. Now, the question is, does racing have a plan? Does the industry, do the TV executives, do the sponsors, do the horsemen, do the owners, do the pharaohs, do they all think that a Triple Crown is important? Louisville, Baltimore, Belmont, the way it's been done for 150 years, or do we want to F that up and just go to Santa Anita and Gulfstream because that's what we own and that's where we can monetize and that's where the weather's nice and that's where the next Bob Baffert or Pletcher want to go, and they'll do it on June 5th and turn it into bring Tom Brady down and LeBron and MJ and roll out a carpet and palm trees and put pretty girls in bikinis. Like, I they need to figure out industry-wide. You talked about the federal part of this. It really starts to become like the IBF and the WBA and the WBC and the unification and the emancipation and like all of that. And where's the Preakness? We're kind of screwed in all this. So I don't have my burr up this week so much in that case, but it does feel like they don't have a plan because this is a plan from 50 years ago, not a plan for the next 30 years to fortify the sport, sponsors, TV, build a brand. It's not good for anybody. That horse is not running. It's not good for TV. It's not good for you. It's not good for the daily racing form. It's not good for anybody.
Yeah, I totally agree. However, it would be like moving a mountain to get it to change. So, you know, where would you start? Would it start with discussions between NYRA and the first people? You know, it's not Magna anymore. It's 1/ST.
Who's the grown up? I mean, seriously, who runs the industry? I mean, I literally, like daily racing form. I don't know if you run the gamblers. Could bring people into a room and say, let's have some sort of summit here. Like the old movie, The Warriors, you know what I mean? Let's bring everybody in and let's listen to smart reporters. Let's listen to smart leaders. Let's listen to people that have invested millions or billions of dollars in the industry to figure this out. But I don't know. Dude, I don't have a press pass this week. They don't even send me press credentials. They don't even – I didn't even know where the draw was or when it was until I saw it on Scott Wyckoff's Facebook. Thank you, Scott. That Chicago band looked good. I've been here my whole life, and they don't really promote the race. I mean, they don't give anybody – they tried to drag the race out of here, and now we've sort of – we got a track. We got money. Here we are. We're going to do this. What's the industry going to do?
I don't know. You know, really what drives this industry, there's only two factions that really matters. Everybody else is window dressing. It's the horse owners and it's the horse bettors. And those are the two factions that really, that without them, we're nowhere. And so there are many people.
Will this race be bet more lightly? I mean, across because
absolutely.
That's not good either. Then,
you know,
right?
It still might. I don't know what the Preakness is. 200 million. You know, in terms of handle, I'm not sure what that would be. You know, the Derby's way up there. I couldn't even give you a figure on that. But the Derby.
But my question would be: is it precipitously less because there's no Triple Crown this week? And I would think it has to be 10%, 20%, 30%, whatever that number would be.
I say it'll be 20% off. Well, you know what? Who won last? Oh, last year we had the whole Medina Spirit controversy already boiling. You know, it was like six days after Bob Baffert made his dramatic announcement at his Churchill Downs barn. But anyway, from what it should be, it'll be down. I'd say maybe 25%.
Marty McGee is here. He's from the Daily Racing Form. This is the first time I've gotten a little angry about it. I mean, I've had nice conversations because the conversations with Greg Scher were like, how about that Derby? The girls were pretty. Dresses were nice. Weather held up. How about that race? Oh, my God. But, you know, with Donna Brothers, it was more like horse almost attacked the other horse, right? And I said to her, that happens, right? She's like, that never happens. And I'm like, wow. She said she's never seen something like that happen. So when it comes to that horse and what happened in the race, let's talk about the Derby. Let's talk about the Preakness and let's talk about how that race set up in a way that, do you throw it out? I mean, is that horse really that good? Are we going to see that again?
I don't know if we will, you know, and that, I think the owner, Rick Dawson, was more responsible for skipping the race. I think Eric Reed wanted to run, honestly. You know, because what if the horse Rich Strike wins the Belmont and the rest of your lives, you're going, well, wait a minute. Couldn't we have won the Preakness too? If he proves, you know, he won't be the favorite in the Belmont. I can say that much. The Derby was very formful up front, except for Rich Strike coming and getting those two favorites, both Epicenter and Zandon. And, otherwise, you know, it was a cleanly run race. The fact that a jockey named Sonny Leone, who nobody had ever heard of, kind of fits my theory that there are probably 400 jockeys. If you put them on the best horse in the Kentucky Derby, they could win the race. Shane Sellers, I'll never forget, told me 30 years ago, he goes, Marty, I can only ride them as fast as they can run. So, you know, giving it's about the horse. Now, whether or not he will ever duplicate the effort he gave in the Kentucky Derby, that's what we're all wanting to see. But in the meantime, Epicenter will be about even money in the Preakness on Saturday. I think he'll win, although there's a lot of precedent for the Derby runner-up to take a lot of play in the Preakness and not come through. I compiled a list this week in the last 60 years. 11 Derby runners-up have been the favorite, and only three of those have won. And only once, Nestor, in the last 60-plus years, has the Derby runner-up been the favorite and won, and that was 1993 with Prairie Bayou. So having said that, I still think that Epicenter, the Derby runner-up, will be favorite and will win.
Well, I mean, you might have thought that 2 weeks ago, though, too, right?
No, I loved Zandon. I did bet eight little bitty dollars on Rich Strike just because, as I said, Eric Reed was my friend. I didn't want to be acting happy. I wanted to be happy. So I was happy that he won. I've got a, if you check out my Twitter feed, he gave me a big kiss on my cheek.
You got an $8 on $8. Was it 80 to one. So you cashed a nice little ticket.
Yeah, I got 650 that covered all my sins for, you know, all my losses on Zandon and some other crazy stuff that I had going, you know, the way we do with our,
I know how you bet, man. I've stood at the window and been like, You know, and then I've watched you cash tickets, all of you guys. And, you know, it is amazing. And I just came back from the Super Bowl, and I haven't talked about this a whole lot, really. And the Super Bowl radio row is gambling row now. It's the sport, you know, obviously baseball, football, all in. You know, it was always the thing that you could be out there working for the Baltimore Sun, writing a story about a horse and walking up and putting $20 down on a horse. It was just, it was wild, right? Like to a guy that covered hockey, right? And the fact that it took 40 years for, you know, the owners of you know, Mr. Big and Mr. Kraft and, you know, all these guys to cash in and be a part of all of the action that horse racing literally was built upon, right? And the legitimacy of all of it. Now they're trying to legitimize it by throwing Calvin Ridley out and figuring out who's throwing games and what officials might be in, because all of that human element is also involved, that they never wanted anything in Vegas and all that. How do you feel about that? Because, like, horse racing was always your thing and you could gamble on it. And other than the lottery and some dirty games and some football action on the weekend, it was the one place, like, you were legitimized, McGee, all of you.
Yeah, we were. You know, I've done this. The latest Derby was my 49th in a row that I've attended. So I've loved it my whole life. And I've done it professionally for 37 years. And I, you know, it, you talk about the elephant in the room. That's what, when Al Michaels would slyly refer to the over-under in some of his late game commentary on Monday nights, you know, that was what people really cared about, because they were vested in the game in terms of their dollars. They were gambling on the game. And for them to finally say, okay, let's get a piece of this pie, why wouldn't you?
Okay. I mean, ethically, nothing. I mean, I promote the lottery. Sports wagering. I just think it's kind of amazing. It's all caught up, right? Like that it took this long. They were doing it in Europe for years, and it was always going to come here. Now that it's here, you know, I don't know how it affects horse racing. I mean, my friends at Green Mountain Station, by the way, little announcement. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour at Nick's Grandstand Grill at the OTB next Friday. I was trying to catch up with Tommy over there this week. And if you remember Nick's, Marty, Nick's was the place at Cross Street on the corner with all the seafood that now exists as a horse racing emporium at the Timonium track in the grandstand. And we're going to be doing the Crab Cake Tour there next week, presented by the Maryland Lottery. I'll have some Betty Boop scratch-offs. Also our friends at Goodwill and Window Nation. Marty McGee is our guest. So the horse racing thing and OTB and all of that and the industry itself and what I used to see when I walked into Vegas in the middle of the morning, which is a whole bunch of dudes filling out forms, racing everywhere because there was action. And the sports wagering part of this is, and I talk to John Martin about this all the time from the Maryland Lottery, it's other than horse racing, baseball playing every night and who bet on baseball. Football is this sort of landslide thing that happens for 20 weekends. And we got NBA and Stanley Cup or whatever, but horse racing is still the thing that's there for you in our culture every day. And to be vested and be, know how to read the form, know how to interpret the form, that if you follow the sport and love the sport, there's still plenty of action and plenty of people like you that have loved this your whole life, that here in Baltimore, it helicopters, dude. It comes in for a week, and this is the week. And when Baffert's not here and the winner's not, it's more devastating here. But I think outside of here, and when I go to places where people are into horse racing, I feel like there's an incredible vibrancy inside of it when I see what's going on at Del Mar or Gulfstream, or when I see the lifestyle you have in Kentucky, where everyone knows how to read the form in Kentucky. Everyone.
A lot of people do. And by the way, I love going to Nick's at Timonium. And as a matter of fact, on Travers weekend, this has become a somewhat of a tradition for me. I bet I've been back there 4 or 5 years within the last 10 years. On Travers Day, we go to the Big T and sit in Nick's and enjoy the hell out of the day and bet on the side.
And you call who when you're in Baltimore?
Larry Horning. He's
Me.
Oh, well, come. I might go this year on Travers Day. It's August 27th with the Big T, which I love the vibe there, you know, with the state, with the Ferris wheel over there at the far turn and everything else. And the people are there just to just to love it, just to get
good.
Into it.
Well, I'll be there next Friday doing the Crypt Maryland Crab Cake Tour with Tommy, and we'll have some fun. So for the industry and where you are, give me a state of the industry outside of all of this, because we might get the World Cup here, by the way, right? So, like, it's a crazy, crazy thing, and we're supposed to open the track in 26. I had Bill Cole on this week talking about it from City Council, who did all the negotiation. So we're trying to, like, dream the dream. And I said to him, because they haven't gotten the full blueprints for the track yet. Like, they're figuring out exactly how it's going to look. And I said, well, we need to go on like an investigative tour right now. You know, where would you take me? Would you take me to Santa Anita? I've been to Gulfstream. I went to Saratoga. Do you know this?
No. Tell me about it.
Oh, I went to Saratoga. Oh, I went a summer and a half ago. No, well, before the plague. It was before the plague. I saw Hootie and the Blowfish play at SPAC, and I drove from New York. It was like a Billy Joel song. I drove up the Hudson River line. I drove up toward Albany and to see Hootie and the Blowfish, but we started early in the day because I'm like, I'm not driving up there, and if Saratoga's open, I'm not going. And I wound up having buddies there that day. Everybody should go to Saratoga. So yeah. When I go to these places and see that experience, I've driven past Del Mar a bunch, right? Like, so to me, going out to Solana Beach and hanging out in, you know, San Diego and seeing what that is on its best day. And look, man, I was in My Fair Lady. I remember the Ascot and all that. But the Preakness to me and what it could be as a grown-up event rethought for our city in what Thurby is and Oaks is and all of that, where would you take me and say, man, they're really doing some great things? You've always told me Keeneland's beautiful, right?
Keeneland, Saratoga, Del Mar, anywhere the Breeders' Cup is, and Kentucky Derby Week at Churchill Downs. Those are the five things. It was electric around here in Louisville Derby Week, and it really went so good, and Churchill Downs has to be really happy. But as you're saying, it's kind of an anomaly in the big picture, and the day-to-day stuff, you've seen the decrepit ways that the Pimlico looks when it's not Preakness and all that, and of course it needs a facelift. And they're talking about the $380 million project between Pimlico and Laurel, which has still, you know, it's been on the drawing board for what, 2 or 3 years now. They had the COVID excuse for delaying, but nonetheless, if they really are serious about this, Nestor, about spending this money on that, that would clearly help. But, you also have to wonder, do you need a facility like that when this has become more or less a TV game with more than 90% of any track, like Derby or anywhere, any Timonium, just named Delaware Park? More than 90% of the money bet on these races are by way of people betting on their computers or elsewhere, you know, besides the track itself. So the way a lot of these tracks are being rebuilt, there's one in Indianapolis. There's a few new ones around. They're being built on a real small scale. Fairgrounds in New Orleans, when it was rebuilt, it was built on a small scale. You have people betting elsewhere as opposed to at the track. And if you're looking for the on-track experience, it's like those five things: Del Mar, Keeneland, Saratoga, Derby Week, and Breeders' Cup. And that's about it in terms of the giant spectacle that we normally associated with horse racing in a bygone era.
Well, Marty, when we talked about what they're going to do out there, they're trying to build something that can be used 365 days a year. They're going to pitch the track differently. There's all of these things they're doing, but more than that, I think they're trying to make it fun to go when you go. And I guess the experience, you talk about Indianapolis. I mean, I take notes on all this stuff because I've been to the track in Cincinnati. I've been to the track in Dallas. I've been to Gulfstream. I'm not a racing aficionado in that way, but I do seek out an experience, especially if it's a good experience. My buddy up in Minneapolis has been calling the races up there for years and says it's the greatest experience ever. If you're in Minnesota, you know, for a day or a week, stop by and see that. I'm just wondering how this gets rethought here with this money, with this second leg of the Triple Crown. And I'm thinking, does the industry care? That's what I'm really asking you. Does the industry, is there enough inertia in this to make this valuable again for Baltimore, for the horsemen to come, for TV to be involved. Like, we're about to do a thing here. You know what I mean? And we've talked about it a long time, all my lifetime, all of our friendship we've talked about. I mean, we were together 40 years ago when the lights went out, you couldn't bet on a race. I mean, guy tried to punch the Ray horse. I mean, we...
That was 1999. And you were talking about Paul Allen, who's a great announcer at Canterbury Park in Shakopee, Minnesota. He, of course, is the radio voice of the Minnesota Vikings. Fabulous guy.
PA on the mic.
Yeah, PA is awesome. And anyway, that is a good example of where within a certain community, that is a fun place to go to the races, and they do things right. Now, the way you're talking about Pimlico becoming a 365 day a year venue for other things, what form does that take? You know, I've been in this business my whole life. I don't know how you, to me, betting on the races themselves and figuring it out, that is the fun experience. Now, obviously, that's not shared by, you know, the general public who have no idea how to read a racing form. So
they want to wear a hat and come out and have a julep or a cocktail and see a band, and like, and racing's been trying to embrace that all of our lives. I mean, I went down to Gulfstream in the 1990s
at Gulfstream. They would have,
I saw Air Supply there. I saw Pat Benatar there. I saw Brian Adams there. I saw Cheap Trick there. I would go down during spring training, literally based around when the bands were playing there. It was an awesome experience seeing Pat Benatar and Neil Giraldo from 20 feet away on the backside of a paddock. It was amazing.
But what about Joan Jett? Was she there for that?
I didn't see Joan Jett. No, I didn't miss that one. Marty, you're busting my balls here, but you know how much I love this. You know how it concerns me, and you know how we totally helicopter into this, dude. It's not a burning issue here anymore. Case in point, and I'll drop the mic with this, and I'll wrap with this, but this was a scandal in 85 when the Derby winner skipped it. It's not a scandal this week. It's just, it's a burp, and Sunday will come, and the sun will come out, and Adley Rutschman will come up, and the Preakness isn't that big a deal anyway, and what's a Preakness? And like, it's getting to that level, and what I see that it's happened in Kentucky, and I don't know anything about Derby except what people tell me, is that when I was down there 20 years ago with you and I couldn't move and you couldn't get a room and you couldn't get a beer at the Phoenix Hill and like all of that, I thought this couldn't be any bigger. Just by its own measure, the air has to come out of it like a market bubble. And I'm sure if I show up there next year, it's bigger and better than it's ever been, because they figured out the Super Bowl gets bigger every year. It doesn't get better. I've been to 28 of them. It does not get better. It just gets bigger, more expensive, all of that. But the Derby, to me, I feel like from the outside, from seeing friends and people like you that experience it, it's bigger and better than ever if you fly into that. If you fly in there on Thursday, you feel like Tom Brady and Giselle.
Yeah, it's an awesome experience. And you got to remember, there's only one Kentucky Derby anywhere. So that's why it's so big.
You speak like a blue-blood Kentuckian. That's what, right? Why can't the Preakness be one Preakness? Because when you flew in here in 1984, you're doing your thing, hotshot Kentucky rider, knows the horses, Baltimore Sun hires you. You came up here, horse racing was something here. And certainly the Preakness was something here. The Preakness really was something here.
It still is. It's just not as much this year, Nestor, because they don't have the Derby winner. And that's, you know, it is what it is.
We can't just accept that. That's all. I don't want to accept that. Is that fair enough?
Go ahead.
I don't, you know, does that make me stubborn or just a good Baltimorean? What does it make me?
The latter.
Marty McGee, he's here. He's at the Daily Racing Forum. He has supported me, thwarted me, and put up with me and bought me beer and hot dogs in Cincinnati one night. Dude, you weren't there when the ice cream melted after the game?
Yeah.
Look at that, man. Is that your, look at you. Look, yeah, you can make me cry.
Get swabbed.
You're going to make me cry.
2016 at the Synergy or the Great American Ballpark.
Did I tell you the story of what happened that night?
Marlins won 5-0.
Did I tell you the story of what happened when we left?
Well,
it was 150 degrees.
Yeah, and it was hot.
Humidity was 97%, and there was a thunderstorm, and it was just soaking wet, awful hot. And we swabbed more people than anywhere else on the tour. I have pictures of people lining up to get swabbed. And I had my giant Q-tip. You remember that? In the big tube, Sig made a giant Q-tip for me, and I was holding it up, and I should share these pictures. It'll make me cry, because it's – so we go to the game. We get half cranked up. We got beer. It was dollar hot dog night, 5-0 Marlins. You remember all this, and you bet on the game because you're a degenerate gambler. That's fine. so the game ends. I had so much fun. I gave you a hug. I said, I'll see. I don't even know that we've been in a room to go, well, maybe we had – maybe we saw each other to pray. I don't know that we've really been in a room together since that day. It's 2015. So the game ends. I walk up the hill out of the city in Cincinnati, because it's a little bit of in a valley, and there's a billion people. The Kevin Hart concert was over at the Riverfront Arena, and there's just people everywhere, like the concert let out. And I'm walking up the hill, and I'm walking up the hill, and I'm having a good time, and I get in line for a Grater's ice cream, okay? And I'm a little long line. They had some peach. So, like, I get a Grater's ice cream. And it's like 100 degrees. And I'm licking it. And I'm looking around and I'm like, where's my Q-tip? I'm on a 30 ballpark and 30 day tour. It's 11:15 at night. The game's still going on, maybe. And I've got this giant ice cream on day 9 of the tour. And I'm just enjoying the hell out of it. And now all of a sudden, I've got a sprint down the hill against people coming at me with an ice cream cone because I left my Q-tip at the guest services. When you and I got done, we took all the swabs, all the bags, all everything, and stored it at guest services, and I forgot to take it with me.
I had not heard that yet.
I had ice cream all over my Give a Spit shirt, because I was like running with the ice cream down the hill trying to inhale it, and it was 92 degrees and it was just dripping all over me. I got pictures of it, dude. I'm gonna share it with you. I can't believe I didn't tell you that story. And I got down and I had to go back into the stadium. I'm like, ice cream all over me. I'm like, I did swabbing in my wife in the 30 in the guest service. And they're like, come on in, sir. And they're nice people in Cincinnati and Kentucky. So they let me get my stuff, and I did the walk of shame back out of there. Ice cream all over me. There's your Give a Spit story. That's what you did to me, McGee. All that all beer right. You gave me.
Always good to be with you, my man.
Love you, Marty. Marty McGee, follow him out on Daily Racing Form and Preakness and Belmont and the other 364 days a year. He's there doing it. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop telling stupid stories and talking Baltimore positive.